come. But for those of you who don't know me, I am Lisa Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And this community program and outreach professionals affinity group has gone through lots of different phases. And this time we thought it would be great if we could focus on specific topics that would be relevant to people that are doing these programs. And food pantries, of course, is so important, always has been important, and especially so now. We thought that we would focus on food pantries and unique programs that people are doing with food pantries. So we have two, that's what I'm gonna say. And how we came to this is because of your very thoughtful chair, Dina Stambler from JFS Raleigh. And she is a delight to work with. And if you haven't gotten to know her, I encourage you all to reach out to her privately because she's a wealth of information on any number of topics. But anyway, I know you're taking over now. You're going to introduce our second speaker isn't here, but they'll be coming on. If not, I'm going to be emailing right now. So go ahead.
Okay. And I believe that, and thank you everyone for joining us. Really excited about this topic. Marcy, is it Ingeborg?
Yes.
Okay, terrific. Yes. So excited that Marcy is joining us. She is a pantry coordinator of the Lewis and Goldie Chester Full Plate Kosher Food Pantry. And we are excited to hear about your community garden. And hopefully we can keep it informal if people have questions. Hear how this works and how it benefits your community. Thanks for joining us.
Do you want me to start now?
Yes, let's start now. And we have another speaker supposed to be coming on in a few minutes, but you know, we have definitely like a good 10 minutes. And if people have more questions, we have time.
Yeah. Okay, so hi everybody. So I am in Rhode Island. And I am the only kosher food pantry in all of Rhode Island and Southeastern Mass. And the Rhode Island Food Bank is actually amazing. They work with several farms that have been donated. And they have actually coordinated to have volunteers help at these farms. They are stationed throughout Rhode Island. And the one that I work at that I got involved in is a 1 acre farm. I was called 2 years ago, just randomly. They had extra produce and they wanted to get rid of them. The pantries that were involved couldn't utilize more than they were already utilizing. So they randomly called me out of the blue and said, do you want to come help work? And then you can have produce. And I'm like, yes, sure. So I started volunteering and now there are I was the sixth pantry. So there are six pantries organized with this one farm. There is another farm that I know. I think there's at least two more farms that I know of within Rhode Island that do the same kind of thing. So to actually get the produce, you have to have a volunteer from your pantry work the farm. Each farm is run independently. Volunteers decide what and how much to plant, the harvesting schedule, the number of volunteers needed to harvest each farm, the watering, things like that. The produce are divided up between each of the participating pantries each harvest day. So the one I work at is harvested on Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 and then Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 6. If you don't show up, you can't get produce. We just had a meeting, I guess 2 weeks ago to decide what to plant. So there are people who will volunteer to do the actual planting. And actually our farm, the farmer who donated the land is gonna does the planting for us, which is really nice. And then we have within also working the farm, the volunteers do different jobs, anywhere from coordinating other random volunteers that call or groups that want to participate with harvesting, social media, Facebook, being the coordinator with the farmer, mowing the lawn between the rows. We have a shed, we have equipment. Some of it was donated, some of it was purchased with funds that were raised or through the food bank. And some Boy Scout needed to earn an Eagle badge, so he built us an outhouse. So now we have an outhouse that has to be dealt with. So it's actually kind of great. I get amazing produce every year, every summer. My customers love the produce. And we get kale, we get tomatoes, we get green peppers and eggplant and summer squash and zucchini and cucumbers and green beans. Sometimes we get corn from a neighboring farm that will donate. Sometimes we get, 1 year we got butternut squash. So it's a whole array of vegetables throughout the entire season. And it's really a cool program. But you have to get a farm to donate the land. So any questions?
Wow, that sounds amazing.
I have a lot of questions.
Yeah, I feel like I have a lot of questions too.
But I'll let other people ask first. Do other people have questions?
I want to ask first, are you finding it easy to find volunteers who are willing to do the harvesting, or are you ever short people?
Each pantry has like designated volunteers that go and work the farm. I'm not an outside person. I am not a dirt person. I am not like a sweaty exercise kind of person. So the first year I had trouble finding volunteers and I had to go do it and I was miserable. But then last year with COVID, I put out on a Jewish listserv looking for volunteers. And I got a bunch of people who wanted to volunteer because they were like tired of being stuck at home. And they loved it so much that they're going back this year. So I don't have to go pick. I don't have to harvest. I'm so excited. But then I meet them back at the pantry. They bring the produce back and I meet them back at the pantry and I help unload their car. And then I save them for my distributions.
So my question is, we're talking, hi, Joe, how are you? Joe is the co-chair of the Food Pantry Professionals Affinity Group. And we're just talking about this farm that Rhode Island Kosher Food Pantry partners with, and their volunteers go and harvest the vegetables. They don't have to plant them, but they harvest them and mow the lawn and bring them back and all that kind of stuff. I'm wondering how much you get and, you know, how big is the farm and how did you already tell us how you partnered with that farm? Did they come to you? Did you go to them?
I did. Because they called me. Mm-hmm. It was very random. Let me pull up my little...
You know, any agency could probably reach out to a farm. I know that there's right. So many of these kinds of organizations that are now partnering with food banks to provide food. Nonprofits are partnering with them.
Right. So last year, the farm harvested over 10,000 pounds of produce, which is the goal is to do a minimum of 10,000 pounds. I think last year it was more. Let me find my list.
Does anyone else work with farms at all on this call? Yeah, so Leslie in Seattle and I guess Sandy are both in Seattle. You work with a farm. Anyone else?
We get food from local farms, like local gardens.
We've gotten some of that in Raleigh as well. There's a CSA box that will give us the extras.
But this sounds like your volunteers work there. I'm sorry.
Yes,
we actually have a community garden on the right next door to us. Well, we're on the campus of Hebrew Union College, so. We actually have community garden with right now it's about 12 or 15 raised garden beds where we plant produce for the pantry. So
when you say we, your volunteers or you?
Yeah. So it's a collaboration between JFS Cincinnati and Hebrew Union College. So mm-hmm. that some of their students help. We have a master gardener that volunteers his time. That kind of leads the planting and lets us know when things are going to be coming into harvest. And then we have staff and student volunteers harvest when it's time. So,
It's a win-win, I guess.
Yeah. It's been challenging. Well, last year it was hard because nobody was on campus, so it was hard to keep up with everything. And we were under strict rules to not bring extra people on the campus by the dean. So it kind of handicapped us in that sense. But we're excited for this year. So getting back to it.
So
I have a question just
talk to us, Joe. Yes, say it.
About distribution. And you all have, cold storage for the veggies until you hand them out? And do you hand out recipes? I mean, do you ever have clients say, I don't know what to do with this? And
or no idea.
I don't hand out recipes because most of my customers really kind of know what to do with a tomato or a cucumber. Mm-hmm. They are allowed to, I give them a limit as to how much of the different produce they can take depending on what I've got, like one squash or, three tomatoes or whatever it is. Some people do ask, what do I do with this? And I'm like, you can Google recipes. I just kind of send everybody to, Google. But I can get anywhere from one week I got 4 cases of cucumbers, 1 squash, 2 bunches of kale, 1 box of zucchini, and 1 box of green pepper. So I have to kind of divide it up between who's going to get. And sometimes, I'll just send stuff to my homebound customers who are delivery if I don't have enough for everybody. So I kind of have to pick and choose who gets. But my pantry is in a basement. So it's pretty cold down here to begin with. And I keep the temperature really cold. But some of the stuff I do put in the fridge if I have fridge space.
Mm-hmm. Joe, what were you going to say? Or what did you write? What is that?
So we have a organized group in Kansas City called After the Harvest. It used to be called St. Andrew's Society. And they engage thousands of volunteers around probably 100-mile radius to go to farmers that are either planted specifically for After the Harvest, or if the market is flooded with tomatoes and it's not worth the farmers picking anymore, volunteers will go and pick it and then they distribute it to other pantries. They also ship stuff in from across the country and work to get it. If it was going to be, winter squash was going to be thrown away in Georgia, they ship it up to Kansas City. So
is After the Harvest a national organization?
It is not, but they're working to share that model with other cities to continue to grow it.
Uh-huh. How interesting.
We also have something very similar called Hope Harvest, which is an organization that is contacted by farms if they have extra stuff that they don't need to harvest. And Hope Harvest has volunteers that will go and harvest the stuff and then deliver to the food bank, and then different pantries can get those produce. So that's a whole different kind of situation. But somebody had asked about volunteers. We actually have groups that call and say, can we come harvest for you? One year we had the Johnson & Wales University soccer team come out and harvest. All the girls, it was a girls soccer team, all the girls came and they did harvesting for a day. We've had some different camp groups come out and harvest. Sometimes high school students need to do community service for graduating, so they'll come harvest and then we'll sign their paperwork. So it's any number of different people, like random people that aren't even associated with the pantries, that will come harvest as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like to me that this program that you're doing is very well established now, and somehow you have promoted it so that people know to call you to bring their groups there. For so many of our agencies, I think, they would be beginning, having to just develop that relationship. But it seems like now is the time. If not now, when? To quote Rabbi Hillel.
Right. So there's a lot of apple picking in the fall in Rhode Island. So I've called some of the different orchards and said, at the end of your apple picking season, I would love if you have extras. And they're like, not a problem. Call me back in December. And I have, and I've gotten bushels and bushels of apples. So it's just taking that initiative to make that phone call to any random farm or orchard. And they're amazing. And they love to help you.
That's a really good idea. You know, a lot of us, I don't know, feel like, are they going to listen? You know, who are we? But it's a different time now. I do think that's a really smart idea to reach out to those kinds of places.
Marcy, I know you said you had this nice, a great group of people you said that have come out during COVID. I'm just curious, just from like a staff point of view, how much time you end up having to spend managing volunteers, or is that kind of running itself?
It really kind of runs itself. The volunteers that go really just, you know, the pantries that are there have, you know, established volunteers that go on a regular basis. So they will kind of oversee any, you know, new volunteer that shows up that day. And they'll just kind of say, all right, we need help picking tomatoes today, or we're going to pick the zucchini today. Here's a box, and go down to the, you know, walk the block, you know, the distance down to the farm. There's people down there, and just ask for some guidance. And, you know, there's gloves, there's clippers, if you don't bring your own. And, you know, it just kind of works itself out. It's pretty self-sufficient. I had one of my customers go with his four-year-old son one day, and they had so much fun, and the kid didn't even know that he liked green beans, and he was just like eating them off the plant. It was really kind of funny, which was fine. But the dad was like, this is really exciting. I didn't know. So we, you know, we were at the farm, and so we gave the kid a little bag of green beans for the car. But it's also great for families. Like, we had several families come out last year to get out of their house, to have a family activity, to do some chesed, and to give back. And it's just, it's an amazing opportunity for lots of people who just randomly call and want something to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love the idea that you could, clients could come and participate in the process and help others. Yeah. That's really,
yeah, I open it up. Some of the other pantries, I don't think have let clients come, but if my clients want to go, I'm all for that. And somebody asked about, Leslie asked about the schedule. So our pantry has set, I mean, our farm has set harvesting days every week. So it's very consistent. So as I said, it's Sunday mornings between 9 and 11. And because of COVID, we actually require volunteers to sign up prior to going so that we can monitor how many people were at the farm. And then it's Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 6. So that also the pantries can kind of gauge when they're getting the produce and how much they're going to need and what they need to do to supplement what they've got, what they're getting.
And do you have a staff person from JFS, Kosher Food Pantry, there every Sunday from 9 to 11?
I have a volunteer that goes.
And so you know who she tells you, or he tells you who's attended, so you know for your files, or does that not,
well, is that not, it's important? Not, I mean, I have a woman who, her name is Cynthia, and she loves harvesting. So she just goes every Sunday and then meets me back at the pantry, and I help unload her truck into the pantry. So
every Sunday?
Every Sunday. Every Sunday.
So, you know, it's a commitment, right? It's a commitment on Marcy's behalf.
Yeah.
Right, on top of the agency, right? I guess all of you feel that way when you're running a food pantry. It's, it's not a 5 day a week job.
So, I have another follow-up question for that really quickly. We've run into, we have a set schedule as well over here in Seattle, and we've run into times where there's nothing to harvest because you don't know how things are going to evolve over the summer. What's your messaging to volunteers if there isn't anything to harvest, or do you cancel their shifts? What, how do you handle that?
So we ask everybody to pre-sign up because we have been doing it because of COVID, but the pantries will actually, there are people that, there are volunteers that actually go during off days, or off harvesting days, to water and do other things for the farm. Like, that's like their thing. They're really into that. So if they see that there isn't going to be enough stuff to pick, or if we're rained out, there's an email chain that goes out.
Does that happen a lot in Seattle? Is that why you asked? Or,
I mean, I think our growing season just is so variable. We could have a really awesome growing season where it's early. We could have one that's very, very late and until like late September. It just does, it depends. And we are partnering with a local farm. And so, you know, we don't like to cancel. So we oftentimes will have volunteers weed and kind of do some maintenance. And so we're trying to work on messaging around that as well. Right. That's part of this, that it's not just picking the produce. There's other parts that we need to do to support the farm to get the produce. So.
Right.
Exactly. I agree with Leslie. So a lot of times, you know, if they're done picking, like within the first hour, they'll do weeding the second hour. You know, pretty much everybody goes unless it's like pouring buckets. Like I've gone in like the spitting weather, like when it's like spitting or just drizzling. But unless it's like really pouring, we don't go. Cause there's always something that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. It's a farm. It's huge.
Yeah. So, did you want to say something, Erica? Were you going to say something? Oh, I was going to say, Dina asked about recipes, right? And so you don't give them out. But I think that's an I just think it's an interesting idea to do that, you know, with families, whether if you have kale or butternut squash, because some of that stuff is unusual for some families that are, you know, food insufficient or you know, don't have enough food. They don't have those kinds of exquisite vegetables or whatever they're called, not exquisite, eccentric kind of vegetables. Yeah.
So if I have a customer that wants to try the kale, I'll talk to them about different ideas of what to do with it. You know, they could put it in soup or put it in a salad or something like that. So depending on like, right. You know, what I'm like talking to my customers and whatever. But I've thought about giving out recipes, but unfortunately so many of my customers are Russian speaking that the work that I have to do to translate every recipe is so labor intensive that I prefer not to do that if I can help it.
Right.
And they actually, and I mean, I've got people who are Russian speaking who help me with translations and things like that. So I do it. I do it a lot, but most people have cookbooks and can get on the internet, so they're pretty self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Was it Joe? Did you send us an email about a program you're doing with recipes with volunteers?
We're working with the Junior League of Kansas City, and they do a meal program. It used to be their cooking class that they would do in person at our offices, but since we're not in person, they've made it mobile. So each family can come and pick up a bag of additional groceries, and inside it has recipe cards and YouTube videos, or a link to a YouTube video, so they can go watch those exact ingredients and recipes being prepared. Our food bank does. So Harvesters has a nutrition team, and they come up with pantry recipes and produce recipes as well. And we also had a volunteer at one point catalog some recipes. So we have a folder that if we have, I need somebody to figure out what to do with the Asian pears, but we get a lot of those from the Mitzvah Garden at Congregation B'nai Yehuda. But we can just go pull things out and make copies for folks as they want to.
And those of you who are partnering with farms, do your pantries run like with client choice where they can walk through or somehow select from a list what they want to eat, or is everyone gets the same bag?
We ask what if there's things that they don't like.
Okay.
And then we go through that. We're getting ready to launch a neighbor market so that produce that we have left at the end of the week will be put out on tables underneath an awning. And it's open to the public, so they don't have to be a client of the pantry, but they can come in and make sure our goal is so that we're not composting or throwing away as much produce as we can. We've also got some funding to purchase some items so that we can make sure we have a minimum of produce to share. But that's one way we're working to allow people to have more choice. And
so if they don't like an item, you don't put it in the bag.
Correct.
Otherwise, everyone gets two squash, two tomatoes,
yeah,
two whatever, you know, some set number of things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I've never heard of that neighborhood market kind of an idea. Do other people do that as well? Just put food out that anyone can come and take? Is that what you're saying happens? You put a table out in front of your food pantry?
We haven't done it yet. I'll tell you the first Friday, and I'll tell you, yeah, Friday afternoon, how that.
Well, I think that sounds like an interesting model as well, so that nothing really goes to waste, I guess. We'll see what happens if people come and take it.
Yeah.
But I guess it's like trick or treating. When you leave your candy out there, you hope that people just take two, right? Or whatever you write. I mean, I've seen some kids taking like, you know, eight or even more than that. Like, you just don't know. But
we do a hybrid.
Oh, Julie does something. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, and Sandy.
Sandy, you go first, then Julie. Yeah.
So far, I'm sorry, I can't tell where conversation is coming from. We do a kind of a hybrid because of COVID. Everything now, we don't have our choice model. We're putting out bags and people are lining up outside. They don't come into the building. But we found that there are always items that people don't want in the bag, and they were discarding them like right in front of us, basically. So we've put out a table for the discards, and we keep everything there while we're open. And then people can come in. If they're not even in line, they can go, they can take those items if they want them, or people who didn't get them in their bag or they want extras for some reason, they're the people who love whatever it was, they can go over to that table and take them. But to your point, Lisa, we do it when we're there. Mm-hmm. So it's not as likely that, you know, someone's going to come with a bushel basket and scoop everything up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I was just curious, I think it was Joe who was speaking that said you're gonna start this table thing on Friday. Is it specifically to, like, do you have set clients that come to you, or are you open to the general public? Or because the reason I'm asking is since COVID, we've not let anybody inside. And so the way that we used to operate was they came inside, they picked their groceries, and we offered things like toiletries, snacks, stuff like that on a limited basis inside. But lately for a year, we've just been putting that stuff outside. At the beginning, we tried to limit it by putting signs up that said, please only take, you know, two from here, one from here. And it turned into like a free-for-all. But we have been operating with a lot of stuff outside for a year now.
The rest of our program is through a call-in. So people call from their car and we take a few choice items over the phone, and then volunteers put those things together with pre-assembled non-perishables, and then they add the perishable items and they wheel it out to the client's car. This Friday event will be totally new to us, outdoors on the sidewalk. And volunteers are going to monitor. We do have a couple of clients we're going to have a specific conversation with to say, hey, if you want to come at the end and take part of what's left, you can. But we know that there's a few folks who will just try to wipe us out very early in the beginning. So we're going to have a direct conversation with them to try and keep that from happening. But it's open to the community. And we're not really sharing it publicly. The brochures are going to our clients when they come for their appointments in May. And then they will, if they want to bring a family member who's not a JFS client, they can. But it's only for the produce. We're not doing the non-perishables and protein and those things. It's only for the produce and items that will be out on the sidewalk.
Well, it makes sense,
yeah,
you know, to actually give it away rather than have it, you know, perish or put it in compost, right?
Joe, is your agency in more of like a city center or somewhere that gets a lot of foot traffic?
We're on a bus line, but Kansas City is very car centric. So we know there's a lot of our families who would like to receive produce more than once a month. So this will be an opportunity for them to come in and select those items.
Oh, okay. So you do it once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Marcy, you do it every week, correct?
Because of COVID, we're doing it every other week.
Okay.
So truthfully, like in the summer, I'll only take produce every other week from the farm, on the weeks that I'm doing distribution, and then the other weeks, the other pantries can have it. Mm-hmm. If there is overages that the farm can't get rid of, I've actually taken them and driven around the neighborhood and called people who I know, and been like, I've got all these produce in my car, come down and get some. You know, from like the entire Jewish community, the religious community, and they love it. It's so funny. It's like, you know, doing a drug deal out of my car, but it's produce. I just threw a picture up. We do pre-bag like proteins and tuna and milk, like some basics. And then I offer like choice outside of produce, if it's kind of unlimited, or a lot of canned fruit and canned vegetables, I'll put out on carts, bread, pastries, things like that, that people can then pick and choose from. And, you know, we try to, like, some of it, we say, you know, you can only have 2 loaves of bread. And people are pretty good about listening, especially because we're standing there watching them. But, you know, most people like the cans. Like, if they need 3 cans of beans, I'm not gonna stop them. Like, that's fine. I have enough of that.
So I don't know if any of you were at our conference this past month. Anyway, hold on. Okay, so Bonnie from, you don't know this, but Dina was really, well, you talk about it. Bonnie's coming in any second. At least she has.
It was actually
just joined our meeting. Oh, I sent her the wrong one. Oh my god!
Oh, no. Okay, so she is from, I think, believe Miami.
Oh no!
And they did like a very clever scavenger hunt to engage volunteers in shopping for their food pantry, and they also were clever enough, I believe, to get sponsorship. So the volunteers, it was like a riddle, and they would go to the kosher, I think it was like a fish market. And that fish market sponsored that clue. And then they would go and buy detergents, and that store sponsored it. So it was getting the volunteers to go to these different stores in the community, shop for these items, and then donate them. So I think they cover, it sounds, I actually did not hear the presentation. I was telling my supervisor about this today. She's like, oh, I heard the best presentation. You've got to get them. And I was like, oh, that's today in like an hour. So. Yeah.
So I wrote Bonnie and I just sent her the wrong link. Ha ha. So let me just, I'm sending her the correct link. I sent her one for today. Okay. She's right.
Oh, and Joe has a scavenger hunt too. So if we can't get Bonnie. Anyway, Joe, we'd like to hear about yours too.
Yeah. So anyway, so she is from JCS in Miami. Oh, she just told you the whole story. She doesn't only just have the scavenger hunt. She's got a lot of creative ideas. I don't know if any of you have heard about what she's done in her community. And so I do think that you guys could, you know, glean some, you know, fun ideas that you could do with your community as well. So hopefully she's coming on. So continue the conversation.
Okay. Well, Joe has a scavenger hunt.
What?
Joe just put in the chat.
What do you do?
Ours is not nearly as fancy as and sponsored as Bonnie's, but we've had a few groups who will ask the grocery store to do a sponsorship and they'll get gift cards. But we do it in three amounts, an $18, $36, and $72. And that's just an estimated cost. What we find is a lot of people will spend more money, or they'll buy multiples of things. And it was just, you know, what is a fruit that it's candy from the sun and goes in your, or I forget what it was. Oh, I can be made into a cookie or eaten for breakfast, and it, you know, oatmeal. So the family can buy whatever flavor oatmeal they like. Aww. And then before COVID, they would have the opportunity to come back and stock the shelves with those items so that it was more interactive. But they, yeah, it's three. Bonnie's was much, is much more exciting than ours, but it's, yeah, it's three denominations, or, and we change the clues to be items that we need for the pantry that don't usually get donated.
Oh, that's a, so you say 18, basically it would cost you $18. Here are the clues. If you want to spend 36, you want to spend 72.
Yeah.
Very clever. Like that.
So, and then, one of the congregations did it for their mitzvah day. And then we've had people who do it for birthday parties. Uh-huh. So just kind of a different group, Girl Scout and Boy Scout troops.
Uh-huh. I like that.
Bonnie's much more exciting than.
You know what though, but for like a smaller community that may not have those sponsorships or just wants to do something on a small scale, I think that can be perfect. Especially if it's not like a whole day.
Yeah.
Can take 30 minutes to an hour, and it's, some people can shop on their own time and then come in to regather as a group at a specific time so they could do a different day.
Mm-hmm.
We'll let Bonnie share her wisdom.
So Bonnie, I'm so sorry I gave you the wrong link. I was so excited that you were coming on, and here comes Tanya too. So we have two more people, but we, Dina, saw what Limore, who was her CEO, saw you in the marketing showcase and thought the scavenger hunt was such a unique idea. And we thought that potentially you might want to tell us about that. And I have your, what you presented at the program showcase as well, if you want me to share my screen, or you can just talk, it's fine.
Well, actually, you know what I'm going to do, not this minute, but I'm going to I did a PowerPoint presentation for one of the conferences on the scavenger hunt that really lays it out. And so I'm going to send that to you to share with people, Lisa.
Okay.
But basically, pre-COVID and hopefully soon, can I just close my door? There's a lot of noise outside here.
And Bonnie's been in her job for, how long have you been working there, Bonnie?
10 years.
How many?
10.
10 years. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I feel like still the new food bank director. So scavenger hunt is a fantastic, fantastic hands-on volunteer opportunity. In so many ways, I call it friend-raising and fundraising. So you connect with a school or a synagogue or an organization like PJ Library or New Leadership Young Alliance. And we make a list of usually three levels of clues, 18, 36, or 54. Some schools want 72. And we meet at the grocery store, and we've done it at Costco, and we've done it at Target, which is really interesting too. And you, so you've got volunteers. You need to be, you know, connected with whatever group because they're going to bring their people. So let's say it's a school, and I have a cute video of a school doing it at Purim time, because then the kids all wear costumes. And they register and they choose their list, $18, $36, or $54. And then they get a start time and they're off and running, literally. And the clues are fun and silly. They're not difficult. It's not, you know, meant to be like a real brain drain. It's a honey nut of a note, and it's a fish that lives in a glass bottle. And it's, you know, some schools want learning stuff. They do word searches and dates, but so there's a lot of ways to go, but basically then people then get, there's a table, a couple more volunteers. When they're done, the volunteer checks their cart, make sure everything's kosher. Then if it's buy one, get one free, they get two, and then sends them off to pay. They pay, they're responsible for staying in their own price range. Some people spend unlimited, they don't care. Some people put something back. And then the group either comes out to the food bank truck to load, or they put in their cars and they go back to the food bank to stock the shelves, depending on the group. I would say at a minimum, a nice group, we get about $2,000 worth of food. With the bigger schools, it could be up to $5,000 worth of food. But it can be done with anything. I've even done it with the Girl Scouts and taken the $18 list and told, you know, four girls in a cart, $5 each, because it's such a fun, engaging thing for them to do. It's not just about the money. It always gets in the newspaper. It always gets in the Jewish papers. The schools publicize it. We usually get a couple $100 to almost $1,000 in gift cards. People stop the kids and ask them what they're doing and give them money to shop.
Oh.
We're talking about doing a singles one now.
Oh, good.
There you go.
Singles that don't, you know, and so you'd walk in and you'd get a team color. So you're a team of 10, but with all new people. So, and we're trying to hook up with a local bar that's walking distance from the South Beach Publix. So the awards would then be given out at the bar. And we give out awards like best team name, like hashtag the food bank kids, and the slowest team and the fastest team. And so we make some silly certificates, you know, for some people. Some schools do prizes. Hillel, for example, they've been doing it for years. It's their big family event of the year. That's our biggest one because it's a large high school. And then we do a mega hunt in the spring that brings in anybody and everybody who wants to join, from small kabbads to, you know, to schools, to synagogue groups. And that's the big one because it's done in Purim costumes. So
everybody
really loves that. When you see these kids running around the store as bananas and superheroes, it's really a lot of fun. And, you know, I've had agencies that have heard about it in my own backyard. They're doing it now in Palm Beach and Fort Lauderdale, and in Cincinnati, they called me about it, a few other places. So anybody can do it as big and as little as they want to. And it's really fun. And you, by bringing people back to the food bank, then you're also creating new donors who've never been to the food bank and marvel at what you're doing. And it's just been a great way for me to grow my donor base. So it hits all the boxes: kids, singles, adults, young adults, donors, volunteers. That's it. And you know, you could send out a shopping list, but it's just not the same as competition. Even when there's no prize, it's just, you know, the glory, people love it. So we've been doing that virtually during the pandemic. We send the clues to the school. School sends it out to the parents. And then they drive by here. I'm open on a Sunday for them, and they drop off the food. But I think pretty soon we'll be able to go back to the store.
That's awesome. That's a fantastic program, Bonnie. Thank you so much for jumping on. It's so last minute. And we have time for like a quick question or two, because I know we want to hear from Tanya before we let everyone go. Erica, do you want to?
I think these sound like the whole idea of a scavenger hunt sounds like a lot of fun. I'm not quite understanding where the fundraising piece comes in. If you're buying these gift cards to give to each team.
No. They're buying. They spend their own money.
Okay.
They're coming for a minimum of $18 and a maximum of $72.
Got it.
So I'm getting between $2,000 and $5,000 worth of food. We have scoured the store and the websites to make sure what we're getting is on sale or buy one, get one free. So, you know, when we do the clues, so there's a lot of value in that. I've got a parent at the end that says, hey, you want to use your change to buy a gift card, $5 or $10, depending on the play. Sometimes 80-90% do that. So I come out with a stack of gift cards. And then it gives them the opportunity to learn about the food bank. And believe me, I have had a lot of big donors come in through the scavenger.
Yeah, I think it sounds really great. I have a question for you. And then I know we have to go to Tanya. And Bonnie, I want to thank you very last minute jumping on this call. We really appreciate it.
Lisa,
Bonnie and my daughter work together in Miami.
I'm going to send you a video and the PowerPoint. And anybody, feel free to call me. I love sharing scavenger hunt and birthday club. It just makes kids so happy, which makes me
okay. Happy. And Bonnie, I wrote you privately. I wondered if there was a way that you could send me a sample or sample scavenger list question so that people get a sense. I can put it into the resource library. And so you guys can go look for it in the community programming and outreach professionals resource library file. If you can, that'd be great.
It's all in the PowerPoint. I did this few years ago, and it's all in there with the rules and the clues and
everything. Nothing's better than that.
When we go on to Target, we get things like pillows and fluffy towels. People go crazy when they get a clean pillow here. Yeah. So there's so much, I'm sure I'd love to hear once you do it. If you've got some new ideas, let me know, because I've been doing this now for about 9 years and people do not get tired of it.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you again.
I'm going to put Bonnie's email in the chat for all of you, okay? So you know how to get a hold of her. Okay, thank you, Bonnie. And she's super willing to talk with us, as you can see.
As you can see, I'm a talker.
Yeah.
Bye.
That's great. I want to quickly introduce Tanya, is it DeMajo?
DeMajo.
And she is from Jewish Family Services in Vancouver. She's the chief executive
officer. She's the CEO of Jewish Family Services in Vancouver. Thank you for coming on.
Awesome. We're so happy to have you. Your program sounds really unique, and we're so glad you can be here.
No, such a pleasure to be here because the kitchen has been a project, a big project that the Jewish community in Vancouver has been working on now for a number of years. So a program, the main program that we had in addressing food security was pretty much a food bank. And in addition to that, we did have the food vouchers program. So when the COVID hit, we just realized that there are a number of other gaps that we needed to address. And as a result, we developed a couple of new programs, such as Breakfast Club, that supports families with kids age up to 12. And the meals program for seniors who were unable actually to cook their food. So even if we send them groceries, they were still not able to cook. And also people with disabilities and generally people having the surgeries and coming home after some interventions. We realized that we do actually have a number of people that we were missing in the past. So as we were going through the pandemic and as we were talking more about what the food security means for our community here, as you may know, Vancouver is it's very strong on a food generally, and there's just a lot of conversations about food in a mainstream community. So we basically shifted our focus to change the programs in a way that they address accessibility, healthy food, good food. We stopped focusing on the canned produce, canned items, and really focused on the vegetables, fruit, cheese, milk, eggs. So really kind of the basic nutritions. And back in October, I started having a conversation with the community of donors about the potential of having the space where we could integrate different services, because as we all know, low-income people are not just in need of food. Like those issues, the poverty issues, are very complex issues, and they also need access to a number of other services, and such as case management, housing advocate, counseling. The seniors also need support through the home support services, and you know, because we do provide all of these different services, it just kind of came as a no-brainer. Why wouldn't we integrate all of that together and really build a place where when people come for one service, they can access all these different things. And that's how the kitchen concept pretty much came together. A donor, one of our also board members, liked the concept and idea and supported us in building this space where basically right now we integrated all these different food programs, because in the past we had the food bank in one program, the meals in a second space, Breakfast Club in a third space, because we just didn't have one space that integrates everything. So now we are able to do that. And in the location, we have a number of case managers working here and all these other stuff. So that we can now provide a pretty much integrated support that really addresses poverty as an issue, not necessarily just food insecurity. And so we can connect clients, with different type of resources. The other thing, and I think I'm going to wrap up with that, because just in case if you do have more questions, One thing where we really wanted to focus with the kitchen is really not to focus just on a food bank, but on building a lot of different programs. So one of the other program that we are working right now is the subsidized market. So we will start having a program here where clients of different socioeconomic actually background can order food directly from the farmers. And then based on their income level, they can apply for subsidy. And so it is the way we saw it, it's a dignified way of accessing food because it does create a sense of community. So it's not like they need to prove us that they are poor so they can get the food. And it also just feels like more accessible. The other thing is because we also were able to purchase a van, actually a truck, a cube van, back in September. So one other concept that we are working on is building building the mobile market as well, because outside of the kitchen, we also have 7 different communities outside of Vancouver that we are working with and that we call hubs. And so basically we are building this network of supports that again addresses not just food insecurity, but also community engagement and community development.
Wow. That's a lot of information. That's amazing. I think that mobile market is especially, that's mm-hmm. it just seems really, I mean, it all seems incredibly innovative, but just to even think outside of your walls. Mm-hmm. Even those are incredible walls that you have. I watched the video that you sent. That's really impressive. I know we don't have that much time. Does anyone have any questions for Tanya?
I do, but other people can ask. You could think of it while I'm doing it. How many people are working in this new program? Did you have to hire new people, or are you just redistributing some of the staff that you already had?
Yeah, so we basically restructured everything. So the services generally, so we can actually develop this new model. So we did hire generally a couple of new people over the last year, so we can actually expand the food programs. But generally, the first step was restructuring of the existing services.
Right. I like it. So they come in through there, and then they can get so many other things. I mean, I imagine that potentially some of the other agencies are like that when someone comes in, that you then provide counseling, but everyone that comes in automatically gets into that program, right? Of all the other services. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's what happens in every food bank, that some people just come in and get food and then go, you know, their merry way.
The video, can we put that in the resource files?
Sure. Did you send it to me? Tanya
sent it early on.
Yeah, I have it then. I'll put it in the file then. Mm-hmm.
That was like your celebratory event.
Yeah. So in Atlantic County, you're the one with the mobile food truck, right? Is that Atlantic County, New Jersey, Vanessa? Oh, that's not you.
Yeah, it's not us. Yeah,
okay. Did anyone see their agency doing any of the kinds of programs that we've heard about today that are new?
We're trying to explore, so I would love more information, and maybe I'll email you. Mobile market. We're trying to think outside the bounds of the walls of our food bank. We do a lot of we have a coordinated program, but where we are in Seattle right now, it's very uncar friendly, and the population has moved from us. So, and we also now there are 10 food banks within a 3-mile radius of us. So really, if we were to start a food bank for food accessibility now, we would never do it where we are. We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and we're not convinced we need to buy or have another food bank somewhere. So we're really exploring this idea of the mobile food, a mobile market, and I would love to either hear more about it, and I would like to email you, because that we're looking beyond our walls, as you said, Lisa.
No, absolutely. You know, please feel free to reach out because, you know, I have a lot of passion for the markets and working with the local producers as well, because all of these kind of concepts are coming from that sustainability, because we really want to move away from looking at food insecurity just as whatever poor people get, that's good enough, to more really, you know, dignified access to food, that we all have rights to food. So,
and we're even thinking, we're trying to rename our whole area, and it all used to be called food bank. Everything was food bank, whether it was home delivery or whatever. So we're really thinking words make a difference, and we're talking about our food access programs. So that department, which is under community stabilization, we're trying to just use the name food access programs, which can include a food bank and can include home delivery and can include whatever. That's what we're looking for, is the rest of it, to expand food access.
Yeah. Well, good luck. We want to hear about what your title
just
is.
Starting. Like, yeah.
Right. So theirs is the kitchen, which is interesting, right? That must have been who decided that? Was it a committee meeting?
Yes. Yeah. So we did have a committee. So, you know, we realized the kitchen is the place for, you know, for cooking, for fun, parties, connection, all of that, for meals. So it kind of made sense to, and, you know, same thing as Sandy was talking about, like everything that we talked about was the food bank. And mm-hmm. we really tried to start, like, that was the first step, like changing the words and starting with the words and changing the language around it.
Right. And Joe just wrote that you're Kesher KC, but not everybody knows what Kesher is. A lot of times people have a difficult time with Hebrew words, and Kesher means connection. What's Kesher?
Connection. Connect.
What are other people's names? Well, Rhode Island Kosher Food Pantry, we see that. And the Squirrel Hill Kosher Food Pantry, we saw that earlier in Pittsburgh.
So we're the Harvey Kornblum Jewish Food Pantry, mm-hmm. and we're actually... it's nothing formal. This is very under the table. We haven't actually gone anywhere with it, but we're talking about trying to figure out how to change the name so that food pantry isn't included in the title.
Yeah.
We don't want, you know, we don't want it to steer people away.
Mm-hmm. What about Matt or Vanessa? Do you have a name, or Julie? Sorry, Stina, you talk.
No, I was just saying, this is like, you know, a whole other interesting conversation that we're getting into in the last minute of our meeting.
Okay.
But I think it's really powerful and, you know, could be revisited. Because JFS is just the JFS food pantry. We don't even have a Harvey Kornblum to attach to it. So.
Not yet.
Same here for us. It's the JFS food pantry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's time that we have to wrap up, but you know, from what I heard from different people, this was a great meeting. It was really a lot of good information was shared. So I know Dina's going to thank you all, but I also want to thank you all for sharing everything that you did and coming on and making the time for us. And you know, it makes a difference, and you know, we say it and everything, but really together we are better. That's what I believe 100%. So Dina.
Yes, thank you all for making the time this afternoon. I really appreciate it. Who presented, who shared, who asked questions, who listened. Exciting, and I feel like, you know, this is how we get ideas. And I love that we're so willing and free to share information. And I you know, was jotting down so many notes. I'm excited about implementing some of these ideas and sharing them with my colleagues. So again, this group is program engagement, outreach and engagement and programming. So if it ever applies to the topic, we're trying to change the topic for each meeting. So our next one is August 9th, family life,
education engagement program.
Engagement. Right. If that relates to you or someone in your agency, and if it's around food, if your primary, you know, responsibilities are a food pantry, but you're trying to engage families, or you're doing something interesting, or you want to hear some ideas, come. This group's a little more open. It's a little more flexible. It's mostly about, I would say it's about programming. Yeah. And that's why this wasn't just about how to put food in bags. It was how to engage your clients, your community, in food and all that we do programming around food. So thank you again. Feel free to reach out to me or to Lisa with questions. I think we'll try to get everything in the files. If you don't have to access those files, ask Lisa. She will, I think she'll send you a link.
Not the link. Everyone knows how to get into the files, right? Yeah. Resource library. Okay. So
Erica does not.
Go to members only. The network, the username is network, capital, N-E-T, but I'll send it to you. I'll send it to you, Erica. If everyone knows, I can't remember because it's already automatic, but I think it's network is the username, capital N, and then the password is capital, all caps, NJHSA 18. Username, network, capital N, password, all caps, NJHSA 18. And that's how you get in. And then you go to the resource library, search by affinity groups. And you'll search by this one. And if you don't know, write me and I'll tell you again. Okay, thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.